All right. Well, thank you guys for being here. Glad that you are here on, I feel like whenever we have like that weird, it's May 31st today, so I feel like we're getting like two Memorial Days kind of weekends. It was very early this year, so it was kind of strange. But I do want to say if you're a guest with us, we do have these Connect cards. They are on the floors right in front of you, so you can grab a pen. You can give us a little information about yourself. We'd love to get to know you. There's also a very specific Connect table back there, and you can just run by it and grab something because there is a little cup there that has a bunch of information about us. We'd love for you when you drop your card back there to grab one of those. It's our gift to you and just us to get to know you and you also to get to know us a little bit. There is also a sign-up table as you leave this room that has different sign-up places to sign up right in the back. And one of the places there is our picnic potluck. I just wanted to mention it real quick. Friday, June 12th, we're going to have a picnic potluck at Oakhurst Park. The church is going to provide drinks and ice cream, so we'd invite you to bring a dish to share, and we want to get an idea of how many people are coming, how much stuff to have. So if you are interested in coming, there's a place to sign up, and it's just something that's pretty simple that we've done before where you just bring a dish, bring something to, you know, snack on for yourself, but other people could eat as well. And again, we'll have drinks, we'll have ice cream, bring things to play there, any different kinds of, you know, volleyball, cornhole, frisbees, whatever you got. There's also a great park for kids, so if you have kids, bring them, and they can come hang out as well. I also just want to do one quick side note. I went to the men's Bible study on Wednesday night, and I just want to put out to all the men here. Wednesday morning. It was a fantastic time. I would strongly encourage you that if you are able to at 6:30 a.m. this coming Wednesday, we are reading Joshua 1 through 4. And so if you would like something to read alongside of us, we are always giving you different scriptures to read, and this is for anybody in the church, but specifically for the men of the church, I would just say Joshua 1 through 4, we are reading for this Wednesday morning, 6:30 a.m. If you don't have a Bible, there are Bibles back there on that Connect table. Those are free to you. Grab one of those Bibles. You can put your name in it, make it your own, and take it home and read Joshua 1 through 4. It's about a third of the way through that Bible. You'll find it, Joshua. And come on Wednesday morning, 6:30, and hang out with us. It's being led by Sean Sunday, who was here. I don't know. There he is. Oh, he's back there. There he is. You went up quick. You were ready for that. Nice. I'm very impressed. So, if you have any questions, you can go talk to him. So there is this famous miracle that Jesus did in Matthew 14. Some of you, I am sure, have some knowledge of it or have heard about it or have read about it over the years. Even if you don't have a big church background, maybe you know about it. It's called the Feeding of the 5,000. It's basically where Jesus takes five loaves of bread and two little fish from like this little boy's like lunch. This little boy has lunch. And he takes the food and he feeds thousands of people. And as you know, one of the things that I love about the Bible is how much it talks about food. From beginning to end, food is all over the place. That's why food is a big part of what we do at The Journey. And Jesus loves to feed people. It's a big part of what he does. So I want to read this story. So I'll bring it up here. Matthew 14. The disciples come to Jesus and they said, this is a remote place. So they're off in the middle of nowhere, basically. It's already getting late. Why don't you send the crowds away? They can then go to the villages, you know, places near them, and they can buy themselves some food. And Jesus replied, they do not need to go away. You give them something to eat. And they're kind of looking around. They don't have anything to eat. And they said to him, we went around, basically, we asked people, and this little boy had five loaves of bread and two fish. That's all we've got. And then Jesus does this. That's fine. Bring him here to me. He directs the people to sit down in the grass. I love how Jesus just directs thousands of people, sit down in the grass, takes the five loaves, the two fish, looks up to heaven, gives thanks for it, and he starts to break the loaves. And then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. And they all ate and were satisfied. This is a miraculous occurrence of Christ. This is where he takes these five loaves and these two fish, and he basically starts to break them apart, but it's never ending. He breaks enough apart that thousands of people get fed. They all ate, verse 20, they're all satisfied, and the disciples then picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. So there was even extra food. The number of those who ate were 5,000 men, not including women and children. Again, well-known miracle, the feeding of the 5,000. But I want you to hear for today's purposes how this miracle starts. This is how it begins. When Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Basically, Leave me alone. I need to be able to, I need some alone time. I need some me time, Jesus says. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. This is how the 5,000 gathered. They're like, oh, Jesus is doing things. He's around. So they kind of come towards him. When Jesus landed and saw the large crowd, he had compassion on them and he healed their sick. You'll see the word saw up there. I put the definition from the Greek. This is the way this word is understood. The way Jesus was saying it is, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, basically, he discerned what they were going through physically and mentally. It also means he experienced them. So like I'm seeing a crowd here. It's not 5,000, but there is a group of people here. And I'm looking at you. And in looking at you, I would be able to discern where is the energy of this crowd. What are they going through? What's happening mentally with them? What's happening emotionally with them? I want to experience them. So this is beyond that Jesus just looked at a crowd. This is more that he really saw people. He knew people. I also want you to see that before compassion comes this knowledge. I have to experience people. I have to experience somebody to have compassion for them. It's as if Jesus is noticing what people, what others are dealing with. Throughout the New Testament, this is what Jesus did. And it was pretty constant. He was always seeing people, noticing them, and very often noticing what other people didn't notice. I think about the tax collector Zacchaeus. If you don't know that story, he's up in a tree. He's following Jesus around. He has lots of money, but no friends. And Jesus sees him in the tree. It actually uses the same word. He experiences Zacchaeus, and he invites him down. He actually goes to his house, and he eats, because remember, that's what Jesus does. The woman that is bleeding, she touches him, and he sees her. He notices her. The blind beggar, who nobody notices. In fact, the blind beggar, everybody thinks he's either sinned or generationally, his family has sinned so much that he's blind from birth. And Jesus goes, I don't think so. I think your theology is a little messed up. And he notices him. The Samaritan woman at the well, he notices that she comes to the well alone, that she's not going with all the other women. Why is that? He notices. He notices the widow and her coins. He notices the lepers. He just always sees. He experiences. If you think about how many people come into your life every day, constantly, even people you're really close to, maybe even people you might live with, how often do you really notice what they're going through? Do you see that little look away when you ask how they're doing? When you say, how are things going? And they say, fine. And you go, ooh, that was kind of a fine. That wasn't a fine that's a 7 out of 10. That was a fine that's a 3 out of 10. Or if they say they're busy, but they don't just mean I'm busy. They mean I'm overwhelmed. There's this word I like to use called attuned. To be attuned, to be aware, to be receptive. I used to always, back in the day, I used to always use antennas on my head to say I'm attuned. But then anybody like young was like, what's an antenna? So I'm like, all right, I got to do something completely different. So I do like to think of that, but I really like to think now, I just kind of think of it as like Wi-Fi signal, trying to bring it up to date a little bit, be a little cooler for you people. And it is like a Wi-Fi signal. Basically, you have to have something that receives the Wi-Fi signal. So you have your phone. And you're like, oh, I get things on my phone. It's like, no. You all know what it feels like not to have Wi-Fi. And if you don't have it and you have no other plan and you have no other option, you're stuck. But what happens is when you are able to be attuned, tune in to that signal, a world opens up. Everything opens up. I always think of this as our ability to pick up signals. Really, when you hear signals, it's those first four letters, signs. What are the signs people are putting off about what's going on in their life? We live in this very weird culture that is always asking us to be attuned to our own signals. This has been going on for about 6 decades now. This is kind of the way the culture slowly started to go, and now it is kind of full blast 2026. Everybody's attuned to their own signals. So their antennas are back internal going, how do I feel? Am I okay? Am I normal? What do I need? Am I offended? Am I upset? But if I'm only attuned to my own feelings and needs, I never get to that next thing Jesus got to, which is compassion. In fact, people will say, I have compassion for myself. I care for me. But focusing solely on self is a recipe for difficult relationships. I'll go even further. It is a recipe for despair. If you feel down and sad and worried and upset a lot, you might think about how much your focus is on your own self, your own feelings. Despair comes in. When that happens, it becomes very difficult to have positive relationships, because positive relationships are about looking for the signals of others. This series, we've done a lot of things. It's been really, though, at its core about positive, godly relationships. And the core of that is moving from self to others. There's a little bit of a joke with this phrase, am I normal? And the joke at its core is, I'm so worried about me. I'm so kind of worried about how am I looking, how am I talking, what are people thinking about me? By the way, this is the core of this fun little phrase people like to use called social anxiety. I'll be like, I have social anxiety. I'm like, right, because when you enter into a space, you're thinking about yourself. If you let yourself go and you just think about everybody else, you'll be amazed how much the anxiety starts to go away. It's not so much am I normal, it's a reminder nobody's normal. Everybody's as is. Everybody's kind of got a label on them like, oof, I'm a little abnormal, I'm a little messed up. And so we need to see these signs that people are always giving off about how they're actually doing. And the only way to do that is take the signal off of ourself and put it out to other people. You start with the people who are closest to you. I don't know who that is for you, but that person or those couple people that are really close to you, start really noticing them. Start thinking about what are they going through. Start looking a little deeper into what they say, how they look, what they're wondering about. Think through their words later and go, oh, I wonder if that's actually why they said that. Because I think people are actually giving these signs. Now, I would love if these signs were literal, by the way. This would be so nice. I mean, I would love every Sunday if you all just came in with a literal sign and it kind of told us what's going on with you. And maybe you can do that next week. We can just make that a deal. And you come in and you just go, on a scale of 1 to 10, this is where I'm at, and here's why. So I put a few examples up here so you know what to do next week. Like, wouldn't it be nice if you went into work and your boss said, had a huge fight, right on in the middle of their chest, right here, just had a big thing, had a huge fight with spouse this morning, you should proceed with caution. That'd be so nice. We'd all be like, oh, okay, I got you, all right. I'm just going to go to my space. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Or you go on a date with someone new and you're really excited and you can't wait to get to know them. And their sign says, I am severely dysfunctional. But you're not going to see it for a while. It's going to be a bit. You might want to run for your life. How nice would that be? Nobody comes with these actual signs, though, so we got to pick up on them. We got to figure out where people are at. That comes with us taking the focus off of ourselves. What I found about people in general is what I think Jesus knew. That when we do take the focus off of ourselves, you can pretty easily start being attuned to other people. You can actually start to pick up their signals, if you want to, if you choose to. You can start to see where people are at, the faces they make and what those mean. When you haven't seen someone in a bit, what to do with that? When someone seems a little upset or offended, how to handle that? All of a sudden, you start to get a little more understanding of signs. So I thought I'd give you a few signs just to kind of get us all on the same page. Like, what does this look like? So I'm going to give you four signs. And I'm using road signs because that's the place I'm most unattuned to other people and have no care, yeah, about anyone else but myself. More often than we realize, people are putting up a stop sign for us. We don't always see it. We don't always know what's happening. And they don't do this. It would be nice if they stop. I really, really need you to stop. but they are. Sometimes they're saying, hey, stop talking. Stop rambling. Please stop criticizing. Please stop making me feel bad about myself. Please stop gossiping. Please stop hogging the spotlight. Would you please stop giving advice? When we get attuned to other people, that stop sign starts to make a little more sense. The question is, are we paying attention? And I'll give you a little hint. If you want to pay attention, look at people's eyes. The eyes are the windows to the soul. Well, there is reality to that. That is where people will let you know what they are needing. It's always in the eyes. Because when we accept this signal that we should stop, we also get an opportunity, guys. We get an opportunity to do something that is so intimate, so deep, which is we get to listen. The most important intimacy-building skill in the world is listening. There is something about letting someone just talk. Not for a minute, not for 30 seconds, not so that as they're talking, you're thinking about what you want to say, but letting people just talk. You want to know what's really cool about it? Here's what I figured out. When you just let people talk, and you just let them know that you're there with them, people figure out their problems more often on their own than you ever need to solve them for them. People just start talking through things, and they go, oh, and they're solving it as they're talking, and they figure it out, and they just needed someone to listen. When we ask meaningful questions, when we're open-minded, when someone says something that we disagree with, maybe vehemently, and instead of getting upset, we go, I'm going to let this person talk this out. I'm going to remove judgment. I'm not going to interrupt. What I'm doing is I'm telling the person, beyond anything you're even saying, you matter. You're a big deal. It's significant that you're in my life. Jesus did not just see people. If you read the New Testament, you will see that in the four Gospels, all Jesus did was ask people questions constantly, question after question after question after question. He just wanted to know people. And by the way, on another note, sometimes we all just need silence. We really do. We need it for ourselves. It's important for us to stop as well, to put that stop sign up and go, oh, that's right, I need to calm down. Remember, before Jesus saw all those people, remember what he did? When Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew. He leaves. He goes to a private place. Solitary. Look at how many things in there are about being alone. Withdraw. Private. Solitary. I need to get away from you people. That's basically what Jesus is saying. I need some time. This series, I keep putting this little spectrum up of community and aloneness. And that healthy people find a place in the middle. That if you go too far to the community, you become needy, you become clingy. It's a little too much. But if you go too far to the alone side, you start to avoid people, you avoid conflict and problems. That there's this place sitting in the middle that's pretty healthy. But you definitely need both sides. One of the healthiest things that my wife and I have learned for a healthy relationship is how much we need alone time from each other. She seems to need a far more alone time from me than I need from her, but that's a totally different issue. But sometimes we just need to stop. The next one, pass with care. I use this one because as a kid, when we were on road trips, my father would do this awesome thing. We would be driving, and this is just the kind of thing my dad would always do. We'd be driving, and we would pass a sign that said, pass with care. You know, whatever, I know, it's falling rock, there's something happening. And as we would pass it, my dad would be driving, and he'd say, oh, a pass with care sign. And as he'd pass the sign, he'd go, oh. I loved it. It made me laugh every time. I don't know why. It just cracked me up. And I took that up. When I got my kids, I didn't tell them my dad did. I was like, no, this is totally my idea, kids. As we pass, and I go, oh, and they'd be like, oh, Dad, you're so funny. I go, I know, brilliant, all on my own. But it's important that I'm attuned to the people around me who may need some care. that I'm not just telling people how much I need care. Like every one of us in here has some things where you need some care. I do. In fact, I could take my entire time right now, take this entire moment to tell you all the things I need some care for in my life, in my heart, in my soul. We all have got that. But it's important that I start to tune into others. I start with the people closest to me, like I said, and then I can start expanding that. I can take a little more responsibility for where other people are at. People may not come out and say it very often, but if you watch for it, if you listen to those subtleties, you start to be reminded of how fragile we all can be, how insecure, how lonely, how sad, how upset, how worried. I'll make it simple. You have no idea what it means to people when you respond to their need, because the truth is, lots of people are beaten down by life all over the place. You are coming into contact with them all the time. They're beaten down by their failures. They're beaten down by their jobs. They're beaten down by their families, their disappointments. They're beaten down by the voices inside of themselves. You have to start keeping an eye on people around you. What's really going on with them? Be attuned. And then I quickly just want to talk about that warning sign, because I do want to put this out there. This is for us to be on watch for others around us who, even though they don't know it, may be hurting us. It may be organic. Usually this comes with passive-aggressive words to us. We leave our interaction with them and we actually feel worse about ourselves and we don't know why. We feel more anxiety after talking to them. They may even have harsh sarcasm. They may have subtle anger. And we just need to be careful around these people. And I say be careful because there is full of care again. But in this moment, I'm being careful that I don't let that person sap my energy. Because when one human being saps too much of our energy, we're no good for all the other human beings we could be attuned to. So take that little warning, and then I get to that last one. Construction zone. That if you're going to really see people as Jesus saw people, you see every relationship as construction zone worthy. That without proper attention, all relationships, even the closest relationships you have, can drift. Small conflicts go unresolved. One of the things that I think about a lot with my wife is we have big conflicts, the same conflicts that most couples have. They're around big, big issues. We've been together for a long, long time, like decades now. So the same issues come up. And I hear other couples, and it's all kind of the same. You know, in-laws, sex, relationships with others, work and money. I mean, these are big, big things. Kids, big stuff. But if we don't resolve, my wife and I, the tens of thousands of other little conflicts, who's doing the dishes? Or as my wife would say, who's going to do the dishes correctly, Michael? Oh, I better call her today. Conflict right there. There is all these little conflicts, and if you just let these go and you don't make deals on these and figure this out, how are you ever going to figure out these big ones? Every once in a while, a couple will be like, oh, I've got this big conflict. Can you solve it? I'm like, you guys can't even solve who's doing the dishes. And you're trying to figure out how to solve your sex life or your in-laws or, I mean, this is like, geez, figure this stuff out. Start dealing with the conflicts. All relationships are under construction. Now I'm talking about spouses, but this goes to all relationships. If you have subtle conflicts with people and you don't get them resolved, you know they get bigger, relationships start to break apart, and they can even end. People lose touch, even within families. We miss signals. We say we're busy, or, oh, we just kind of lost touch with them. But something happened. It's important that we take responsibility to help the relationship grow, that we water that relationship. It's important that we don't sit and go, oh, they did that, that's why we don't have that relationship. Instead, I stop and go, did I do everything I could to make things work there? Am I tending to that relationship? In order to have positive relationships, it really requires us to do some work. And it would be great if every other person I was in contact with did the same amount of work as I do on the relationship, but I found most of them don't. Most of them don't. There's a few people who do, but most people don't. That's fine. Take the responsibility. You be the person. You tend to the relationship. You care for those people. As we start to notice these signs, we start to raise our level of depth of relationship. We care more about people. People start to care more about us. We care less about whether they're good to us, whether they're a good friend to us, a good family member to us. We start to care, am I good to them? As we become more and more attuned, it becomes easier. This thing I'm talking about becomes actually pretty simple. It's kind of normal. But if you don't do this, it becomes really hard. And so as you do it, as that happens, you're ready for this next step. Jesus saw a large crowd. He sees a large crowd, and then he had compassion on them. It's really hard for me to tell you, hey, go have compassion on people. Love people. You've got to see people. You've got to take eyes off of self and look at other people and what they're going through. There is that fantastic Greek word, and I took Greek for 2 semesters. I like to say I was horrible at it, but I do know how to pronounce Greek. I'm not even going to try that one, but I put it up there because it just makes me happy just how intense of a word that is. I'll let you know what it means, though. To be moved to action. When I start to see and I'm attuned to what people are going through, I move to act. I am not passive. I'm active. This was the normal mode for Jesus. He would notice people and then have compassion on them. I love the word compassion. It's one of my favorite words. It's actually one of my top 3 values in life, compassion. I like it, by the way, I've said this before, I like it far more than the word empathy. I'm not just like a massive fan of the word empathy. I have empathy for people. I know how to be empathetic, but empathy is a feeling. It's a feeling. And I have a feeling, I have empathy. It means I feel really bad for someone or some group of people. I feel bad, I have empathy. But really what I have found is if I go too far into that, that's really about me and how I feel, not actually about other people. If I'm not careful, it just becomes, again, me coming back, being attuned to me. Compassion is the opposite of this. It is action. It is that, oh, what can I do for this person? How can I change their life in some way? Compassion, action, think about what Jesus did. I mean, it says it right there. First thing he did, I mean, we just went right over this. We go right into the miracle of the feeding. It's like, oh, he's fed people. How cool is that? He heals their sick. It's like, oh, yeah, that's right. He healed a bunch of sick people. Like, that's crazy. In just this one little sentence, he's like, he saw all the people. He had compassion on him, and then he went, oh, I feel so bad for all of your struggles. Oh, I'm going to really think about how much you guys are struggling. He goes, no, I'm going to heal your sick. And he literally heals the sick. And then he notices they're hungry. His disciples go, they're hungry. And he goes, oh, well, I should do something about that. Bring me whatever you got. This is all we got? All right, I'll feed everyone. Tens of thousands of people, probably, when you think of women and children as well. Compassion in this way means that we help in very concrete ways. That's usually going to, again, be the people closest to us first, and then we start to extend out. Do not go just to the 50th most important person in your life to start. Sometimes people do that and they feel good about themselves. Be careful of that. Start here and then get to there. Who knows how many people you can have compassion on in this world? You start by concrete ways. It could be meals or rides or childcare or even financial help. Compassion means we welcome outsiders into our community. That we become welcoming and hospitable right here at the Journey. We let people know, hey, come be a part of what God is doing here. Then when we have friends and neighbors and family, co-workers and fellow students, we say to them, you know what? You should come be a part of the Journey. I've invited two people this week to the men's Bible study on Wednesday. He's like, oh, you should come to that. Come be a part of something. These are people I've invited to the church as well. Compassion means we serve regularly. We volunteer. You can volunteer here on Sundays even. We encourage that. We help. We set up. We clean up. We find ways to serve others in the church. Compassion means we become more patient and kind, even with people who are difficult. Compassion means we pray for others. Above all, compassion means we give generously, yes, but we forgive generously. We're grace-filled people at the Journey. That is the core message of what Jesus is doing. This is the adventure he calls us on. And that may sound like a weird word, this is an adventure. I've been thinking a lot about that word journey. A journey is an adventure. Where are we going? Where are we headed? We're on this adventure with God, with one another, to do something of significance. I look at how Jesus saw people, how he truly noticed them. And I look at my own life, and I would encourage you to look at your own life and go, what else would I do with my life? What else am I going to do with it? Am I going to watch another show on some streaming channel that I have a hard time finding? That I have to call up my kids and be like, all right, explain again how I get into this? Am I going to watch another reel? Who wants to watch another reel today? Raise your hand. Yeah? Want to watch another reel? Or 10? Or 100? Do we want to get lazy? Do we want to get bored? Or do we want to live with something that has significance? This is the grand adventure. This is the journey we're supposed to be on. It is what Jesus is calling to you as well, is that we live out our faith, that it makes a difference, a significant difference, not just in our life, but in how we live and love the world around us. As the worship team comes to lead us, I want to look a little closer at this word compassion for our Eucharist time. So I'm going to put it up here again, verse 14. When Jesus landed, he sees this large crowd. He has compassion on them. He heals the sick. There's a lot going on in that verse. But I want you to focus on that word compassion. I just want you to look at it. I want it to kind of soak into you a little bit. Notice that word passion. I just said we're on an adventure of a lifetime. You're on a journey that matters. You are. It's your choice if you want to live that way. God is calling you to it. He wants you to be on this journey. It is a journey of passion. But that word at its core means suffering. Com means with. Compassion simply means to suffer with one another. That I suffer with other people. In the New Testament, this is a word of action. I don't suffer with people and go, oh, I feel so bad for what they're going through. Again, got to be really careful of that. Again, it starts to be about you, not them. Compassion is I suffer with them and I go and I act. I'm involved. For Jesus, to suffer was not a feeling. In fact, it's called the Passion of the Christ for a reason. In the Catholic tradition, that phrase, the Passion of the Christ, simply means the suffering of Jesus on the cross. What he went through, we're supposed to understand and we're supposed to come alongside and want to be a part of. His suffering on the cross was an action. He didn't just look down at the people who were crucifying him and go, ow. This feels difficult. I feel for what you're going through. He actually acts even as he is on the cross. I mean, consider his suffering on the way to the cross. He gets lashes. He gets a crown of thorns. He's bloody and bleeding. He takes this massive cross, this cross beam basically, and carries it through a crowded street as people are spitting at him and cursing him, and he is suffering emotionally, physically, mentally. He walks that all the way to this hill. He endures all of that, and then they put nails into him. And he suffers, really suffers. He has passion. He suffers. And as he hangs on the cross and as he goes through all of this, with that passion, his response is this. When they came to the place called the skull, where you die, where you're executed, they crucified him there along with the criminals. One's on his right, the other's on his left. And Jesus' response, action. Father, forgive them. Forgive these people. They don't know what they're doing. I mean, think about this. The ultimate act of compassion is he is going through all of this. He is suffering, and he acts towards others. He's attuned to what they're going through. Like, the significance of this is life-changing to me. It's heart-changing. It should be soul-changing. He sees these people, and he gives us a model. This is how you're supposed to live. This is the adventure you're going on. You may not die on a cross, but I want you to be identified with me, that I would die for these people, that I forgive people. This is how I choose to live. This is how you can choose to live. So I encourage you, go and respond to this at the table today. Go to the table of passion, the table of suffering. Take the bread in honor of Christ's body that was broken. Dip it into the wine or the juice in honor of Christ's blood that was spilled, literally. But then you take it into your body and you go, this is how I choose to live. I'm going on an adventure with you, God. This journey, your journey, it's my journey now. Let's go. And then take that in your week ahead. And come back here next week. We have a new series start next week. Come back here next week and let us continue this adventure. And I encourage you, invite people to come along with it. Pray with me as we go to the table. God, I do pray that you help us truly notice the people around us. Friends and neighbors, yes. But family, spouses, boyfriends, girlfriends, parents, children, siblings, aunts, uncles, grandparents. Help us just to notice, to see. And then take that outward, God. To other people at school, to extended family, to other neighbors, to our friendships. God, open our heart to see and be attuned to what people are going through. And God, let us go on this great adventure with you, this journey with you. God, as we go to the table, we come and we partake in communion. But we are doing something, God, so significant. We are taking on the heart of you. We are giving our life to you, Lord. Thank you for your life, God. Thank you for the miracles. But God, thank you for your death and your resurrection. And the life we get to live. It's in your name, Christ, we pray. Amen. Tables are open. Go and respond.